Catch his work online, USA Today, usatoday.com. Find it on newsstands, your local hotel lobby. Follow on Twitter. Use the handle at George Schroeder. You may have deduced. We welcome in Mr. George Schroeder. George, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
I want to start with your discussion, the Football 4 podcast. Nicole Auerbach, Dan Wolkin, you were talking about Baylor, who's fired their coach. They've parted ways with their athletic director, their president. Now, there's a football ops guy, Colin Schillinglaw. You called him the Wolf. I assume that meant Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, kind of the fixer, the cleaner.
Okay, what was his role? And when you consider how people react, his dismissal, has it kind of flown under the radar?
A little bit, yeah. Well, listen, it definitely has flown under the radar because the big names, of course, were, first of all, Art Briles, secondly, Ken Starr, and thirdly, the athletic director, Ian McCall. But the fact that sort of the football ops guy got canned is an indication that he was involved in the discipline process or lack thereof. And that's kind of what happened. By the way, I'd like to, as long as we're talking about the Football 4 podcast, please subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Please do that.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I should, plug that as much as possible, probably, right?
Why not? It's a great, you guys talk, you cover everything. I almost ran out of time to put together what we were going to talk about.
Yeah, well, then you really don't have enough in your life if you're listening to all of that all the time.
Nice plug. So you were going to tell me about Colin Schillinglaw and...
Yeah, we don't know what the reason was that he was fired because we don't, frankly, know the specific details about anything because they're not releasing that from the Pepper Hamilton report. What we know, though, in a broad brush sort of way from what the finding of the, or what do they call it, a finding of facts that they did release is that, members of the football program had attempted to intervene and in some cases dissuade complainants, some of these alleged sexual assault and physical assault victims from taking it to the police or to the authorities. And I don't know specifically what happened with him, but I can just tell you that he clearly was a part of their discipline process or lack thereof, and that's why he's among the guys who got the axe.
Now, you mentioned that report, and we love us reports, the Free Report, the Warren Report, the Pepper Hamilton Report. So you said it in passing there. So the entirety of this report will not be made public, and do you think that's the right step, or is what we found out damning enough?
I don't think it's the right step. But I understand Baylor's position on why full transparency doesn't make sense for Baylor. From their standpoint, look, we've taken dramatic steps, and we're going to take, by the way, apparently 105 other actions that were recommended by Pepper Hamilton. Because we focus on the firings,
right?
There are all sorts of steps like setting up different offices and protocols and structural accountability. Type of flow charts to try to make sure this never happens again that they're taking. We focus on all of that stuff. We focus on all the firings. We don't focus on that. I've lost your question. I'm sorry.
No, I just was curious as to what you made of them deciding not to release the entirety of the report.
Yeah. Well, as a private school, of course, they didn't have to release any of it.
Right.
And while I think that full transparency would be a very good thing here, well, obviously with appropriate redactions to protect the victims and alleged victims, for student privacy, I understand why Baylor may say, we gave you the broad brush version of this. You don't need the details. You understand how serious this is based on, what actions we have taken. And by the way, that the 105, however many actions it is that there's, recommendations that they're taking as a mandate, according to their interim president, by Pepper Hamilton, they said they're going to do all of them, and those are public. You'll know what those are. So, you know, I don't think it's just sort of because I want to see what happened that I think they should be transparent. I think it's because I think it's it gives you a better opportunity to know, have they gone deep enough to the heart of the problem and excised everybody and everything that needs to be taken out. But from Baylor's standpoint, and frankly, asking us to trust Baylor is a tough thing, too.
Right.
But from Baylor's standpoint, they did cut. I mean, they fired the three most important figures at the school, frankly.
So,
from their standpoint, they've done a ton. And I would not be surprised if some football staffers ended up going, too.
Now, the one point you guys made on the podcast, which is important, is there's going to be a football season, and Jim Grobe is the interim coach, and there's been a bit of an outcry about holding recruits to their letter of intent. Is it accurate to say that this is just going to run its course? His job is to field a team, and for all they've done wrong, I think you were the one who said, whoever's handling the PR end is not helping, are they?
No, they're not helping at all. Now, it's hard to know who's in charge of anything, though, in order to be able to coordinate, what a PR person could even say. But they have not done things well. First of all, they are going to play football. They do have a bunch of signed recruits from the February 2016 class. And Jim Grove, the thing that they should have done, when the very first, and probably before this, when the very first word came that a recruit, by the way, very predictable word, came that a recruit wanted out of his national letter of intent, they should have put out a thing that said, we are not opposed to that idea. We would just like the opportunity for our interim coach, whoever he may be, and now we know it's Jim Grobe, and our administrative officials, whoever they actually may be now that everybody's been fired, to have a conversation with that guy and his parents. And then after that, if they still want to leave, then we certainly understand these are extraordinary circumstances, blah, 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 blah. Boilerplate stuff, but it sort of cuts down on the negative optics of this. And look, Baylor deserves all the negative optics they can get, okay?
Because right,
because optics is a goofy thing to be talking about. There were incredibly negative, bad things happening. I'm just saying from the standpoint of the school, somebody's got to be smart enough to say, look, we know we're going to end up having to let these guys out of their national letters of intent, but we also do know that we want to see if we can try to talk some of them into staying because maybe they actually came for the school or whatever. Why don't we just say that? And nobody either thought of saying it or was authorized to say it. And so by the time you do say something like that, and Jim Grobe said it in his introductory press conference last Friday, then it sounds very reactionary rather than getting out ahead of it. So, just from sort of a PR, here's a pro tip type of standpoint, it's just another example of something they didn't do well.
No, I agree. Another story that's, I guess, painted in an unpleasant light. His name is Jeffrey Simmons, the Mississippi State recruit who was caught on video hitting a woman. He's entering school under specific conditions. And some are asking why he's allowed to join the university and football team. But what you did, you shared, I thought, a very poignant comparison with a circumstance that surfaced at Oklahoma 2 years ago and how that was handled. Elaborate on that, because I thought that was dead on.
A lot of people are familiar with Joe Mixon, who was a five-star running back out of California that the Sooners thought was going to be unbelievable and an immediate impact as a freshman. And then, as it turned out, he punched a woman in a late. It was actually at a sandwich shop that was open late near campus in either late July or early August before his freshman year would have started. And the school suspended him for a year,
right?
Rather than kicking him out. Now, a lot of people at the time thought that punishment was too light, and it may well have been. But by comparison to what Mississippi State just did with a five-star defensive lineman, which is to admit him to school and then suspend him for the first game of the season, which happens to be South Alabama, which is a terrible football program.
Right.
It suddenly makes the Oklahoma punishment of Joe Mixon look either harsh or at least right, and I'm not suggesting it was. But what it really does is just, in the light of everything else that's going on, Mississippi State's actions are just so tone deaf and such an admission that the only thing that matters is King football. I get that people make mistakes, and I am all for redemption and second chances. But that does not mean that there shouldn't be consequences, and that sometimes for certain actions, and that sometimes your redemption and second chances take a while to get to, and maybe don't even occur at the same place in the same avenue that you thought you were headed down.
No, there's a tone deaf nature to it. As we continue with George Schroeder of USA Today, I guess we could start calling this our weekly update from the Big 12. Are they adding teams, a new network? Well, the title of your piece is "How the Conference is Expanding One Way But Not Another." You were
right
at the meetings, so they're going to add a conference championship game, not add more teams. They announced an uptick in revenue. How much of a role did dollars play in this decision process?
Well, a lot. I mean, you know, on the one hand, the championship game is going to probably bring them in $27, $28 million a year. That's what the TV consultants told them. So if you game that out and you realize it's not exactly going to be divided 10 ways, it's a little bit of a stay with the conference, but let's just say every school makes $2.5 million extra a year just for staging that game, then it was pretty much a no-brainer for the presidents to go, let's do this. That's also along with the fact that the analytics showed them by the consultants showed that 13th data point that we became so famous when Jeff Long talked about it when Ohio State got into the 2014 after the 2014 season ahead of TCU and Baylor,
right,
that 13th data point would give the Big 12 a better chance of getting into the college football playoff. Now, look, I don't know how analytics can possibly plumb the minds of 13 ever-changing committee members. You know, it's one thing to kind of run 40,000 simulations of how seasons might go, but how do you get inside the heads, inside the room, the boardroom of that hotel in Grapevine, Texas? I don't know how you do that. That said, they think it'll increase the chances of getting in the playoffs. So when you combine that with the free money, that was a no-brainer. On the other hand, there was no financial windfall for a network. There's no great appetite for a conference network from the potential TV partners. Texas is uninterested in dumping the Longhorn Network, which is also a death knell to a potential conference network. And there was no compelling data that showed great financial windfalls from adding any of the schools that we've all heard bandied about as candidates. Now, expansion is not necessarily dead, but it's really close to it. It's on life support for the Big 12. And as of, 3:10 p.m. or whatever time it is right now, they have not expanded. I'm not expecting them to expand. I will say one other thing, though. If they were to jumpstart it and expand again, I think the fact that there's no conference network coming down the pike changes a little bit of the calculus of what makes an attractive candidate. I don't think any of the candidates are attractive enough to do it. But now you don't talk nearly as much, if you were to talk about expansion, about TV markets. And so to me, like the Central Floridas and Connecticuts of the world are gone from the calculus because that was a TV market type of play. So I think you're now down to more of athletic and academic fits. And I think a school like a BYU, a school like a Colorado State, if you needed a partner for BYU, a school like a Houston, those schools move up higher on the list. Houston, of course, has a big TV market, but the Big 12 would tell you that's already their TV market, right?
Sure.
So, and I'll say one other thing. Houston's got almost zero chance because the four Texas schools and the two Oklahoma schools, have zero interest in providing Houston a leg up in recruiting by giving them Big 12 branding. But I've rambled on and on and on. But Steve, the upshot is it was a really good week for the Big 12 in terms of the more money they're going to make and adding the conference title game while staying at 9 games and a round robin. And frankly, it's a good week for them if they have decided to really cool significantly on expansion talk.
Interesting. I want to wrap with the NBA Finals. We've seen a couple of blowouts, but we also saw the Spurs crush the Thunder, then lose the series. And, of course, we all draw conclusions. The next game shows up, and a lot of people end up being wrong. But Golden State is the best team in the league. Would you be surprised if Cleveland responded and made it a series? Or is your gut saying, turn out the lights, engrave the trophy?
I would not be surprised if Cleveland won a game, perhaps even game three. I would be really surprised, you know, depending on what your definition is, if they made it, if the Cavs made it a series. Look, Golden State's the best team in the league, followed closely by the Thunder, followed closely by the Spurs. You could probably go down to the Clippers and the Blazers before you got. I think the Clippers and the Blazers would be a real competitive series with the Cavaliers. I'm not sure the Thunder would be any more competitive with the Cavs. I mean, I just think the West is so much better that the actual finals were played in the Western Conference Finals.
Hmm, I like it. All right, that will do it for another edition of Steve and George Talking Sports. You have yourself a a magnificent rest of your week, and we'll see what we can come up with for next week. Thanks a lot, George. Always look forward to it.
Take care.
All right, take it easy.